But first, Scott Lucas. He's a cultural anthropologist and a former trainer at Six Flags Astro World in Houston. So it's only fitting that he's written a book called Theme Park. It's an exploration of the evolution of the theme park, from the pleasure gardens of the 19th century to some of the weirder contemporary parks, like Migrant Mountain, where visitors get to simulate the experience of illegal immigrants crossing the border. Scott Lucas tells Anne Strangechamps he considers theme parks a kind of liminal space.
I think the liminal space is a good way of looking at it. You can think of that in two senses. I mean, in the sense that Starbucks has been talking about the third place and the idea of a place that's not home or work, it opens up sort of a new sense of space in which people can interact, enjoy themselves, and discover new senses of self. And in terms of that last area, discovering new senses of self, that's the classic idea of liminality in anthropology. It's the notion that you enter a space, you engage in certain rituals, and then you leave that space having been transformed. And so much of what theme parks do and other spaces today, theme spaces like casinos and themed restaurants, there's that focus on saying, we want you to come here, enjoy yourselves, and also be transformed.
Mm-hmm. Well, thinking about one of the very first true theme parks, Disneyland, what was Walt Disney's vision?
I think his vision really was to sort of changed the face of public amusements. He had such a successful career in terms of, you know, being an animator and an industry insider, entertainment insider. With his theme parks, I think his vision was to try to collect all the things that he saw in his life growing up in Marceline, Missouri, going to kiddie attractions and seeing, you know, sort of the surly carnival worker and trying to change that and say, well, what could I do? How could I open a theme park that reflects kind of the American character, that draws on my abilities as an animator to create stories, visual or otherwise, in a theme park? And how can I create a space that everybody will enjoy, that will focus on family entertainment, and that will be a place that people remember? And so I think at some level, Disney, whether he said this or not, I think he probably wanted to eventually change society through the theme park. It's something I think we could look to as legacy today and say, indeed, if you look at the media industry that's been transformed by, say, Pirates of the Caribbean, a theme park ride, you could say, indeed, the theme park has transformed who we are, has transformed society itself.
It's interesting that, you know, this first true theme park, Disneyland, was created by a movie maker, you know, Walt Disney, whose job was to tell stories. Because couldn't you say that a theme park is really, at least the parks like Disneyland, it's like an entire fictional world. It's like somebody's created a movie set. You can walk into the movie, but it's all a fiction.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the work I do today, interviewing designers who develop attractions for theme parks and for other consumer spaces, this is the key point, is that you need to focus on effective forms of storytelling. If you move through Pirates of the Caribbean, the famous ride, essentially it's a 3D version of a story. You have everything in there, from exciting characters like Jack Sparrow to plot development. You move through the different vignettes, different scenes. It's remarkable. It all happens in a span of 3 or 4 minutes. And that's what's, I think, truly amazing about this form, is that you can enter a ride and you can get the story in such a short period of time. So I think, indeed, that when you go into a theme park, it's all about telling a story. And the story can happen at different levels. It can happen at the level of a theme land within the theme park, or it could be within one of those attractions.
You know, Walt Disney had this kind of cryptic remark. He said, Disneyland is the reality. What did he mean by that? Or what does that mean to you?
I think if you look at a lot of contemporary philosophers, French philosophers like Jean Baudrillard, who have talked about this, they sort of suggest to us that when you go into a theme park, when you go into a theme space, there's a recreation of some place. And indeed, we see this on the Las Vegas Strip, where we see versions of Paris and different versions of Italy and ancient Rome and so forth. So there's a work of simulation going on, where we take bits of reality and we recreate them for guests in theme parks and in theme casinos. And at some point, I think a lot of these French philosophers pointed out, you would have a situation in which the simulation supplants reality. Walter Benjamin, another theorist, talked about this when he discussed what the effect of technology would be on photography. So if you reproduce something, does the aura, does the sense of the authenticity, the originality of the original disappear? And for a lot of these theorists, the answer is yes. And so when you get the recreated reality of Disneyland, it becomes more real than the real. This is, for me, one of the most interesting aspects of this research, because I think it's a debate that involves so many different points of perspective and trying to understand, what do we mean by a simulation? What's original? What's a copy?
So you mean partly that you visit Disneyland and you walk through this idealized version of small town America, and then you get out and you look at real small town America and you don't want to live there anymore. You want to live in the Disneyland version.
Yeah, I guess in a sense. And that's kind of what happened, with Celebration Florida, which Disney sort of pulled out of. And just about a couple months ago, I read a story on New York Times, and it was talking about Celebration Florida had its first murder. And this was a big deal because, you know, the idea is that you've created this idyllic space, and wait, the real is sort of creeping in. It's sort of like, you know, in The Matrix, welcome to the desert of the real. We didn't count on this happening. We're forced to sort of, again, reconcile the relationship between fantasy and the real. So it's quite interesting, I think, when you create idealized versions of reality, and then you sort of question, well, what's reality and what's the simulation?
Mm-hmm. Well, today, of course, theme parks have continued to evolve, though I must say, until I read your book, I had no idea quite how bizarre some of them have gotten. There's a really unusual one called Kidzania in Mexico mm-hmm. City. What is Kidzania?
Yeah, Kidzania is an interesting chain that originated in Mexico, and I think there are 10 or so of these small theme parks, and they're going to open up more, and I hear there's one maybe scheduled for the U.S. They're basically miniature theme parks where kids, I think the age range is 2 through 14, they can participate in sort of everyday careers that they might have when they're adults. So there's a section where it's a simulation of a air traffic controller and pilot area, so the kids get to take on the roles. There's another section where they get to work behind a counter of a hamburger joint, and they trade in these currency. They're called kidzos. And as the kids are doing all this, the parents are sort of upstairs behind glass watching all this sort of transpire. I mean, I haven't been to one of these places, but it sounds to me like a sort of a laboratory where you throw your kids in and they're doing all these careers, and then sort of as a parent, you're watching them up above.
Thinking, you look good as an air traffic controller.
Yeah, this could be your future career. The adult supervisors are actually called supervisors, and these are people that sort of give the kids the instructions and tell them what to do and so forth. When I discovered this, I was really kind of blown away because it just sounded like something you would read about in a novel or in some futuristic, you know, movie about theme parks.
Well, there's a slightly sinister side to it also. You uncovered there's a lot of corporate branding that goes on.
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of it. I mean, so hospitals could be sponsored by Johnson & Johnson, and I think in some of them, you know, the burger joint is a simulation of a simulation of McDonald's. And so I think it's one of these tricky places where you think about there is a value for kids to learn skills. They can learn teamwork skills. They could develop their creativity. But then the sort of downside of this is you have all these corporate messages and branding that is being used. And then adults and corporations essentially are giving kids directives on what to do. And it's kind of like the classic thing when you have a young kid who's working on some art project. And if the adult starts to dictate, well, you have to do your lines this way and your perspective should be done this way, in a sense, you're quelling that creativity. And I think it's the same thing. I think the intentions are good as far as kids developing important skills. But then is it good that branding and products and corporations are sort of the ones dictating this and instilling in kids the values of corporations and branding? And that's, I think, the side of it that concerns me the most.
Mm. And so this is back to the theme of the theme park as a form of social engineering.
Yeah, and now I think it's full-fledged with the brand. You know, you could read Naomi Klein and hear a lot about this, where it's sort of like our most intimate values, our everyday lives, are being dictated by brands. And again, if you get it in a theme park, because it's immersive, because it's multi-sensory and multi-experiential, I would argue that it's going to have a deeper effect on you versus just, you know, seeing an ad in print media where it's like, oh, okay, this is an ad for Nike or Budweiser and it's telling me how to be. But if you experience that, particularly as a kid, in an immersive space, I think the effect is going to be double or triple or even more than that.
Well, and I guess the very concept of theme park, even that phrase, by now has become a metaphor that's seeping into many different parts of our culture. The idea of the theme park is finding its way into political discussions. Haven't there been critics who've charged that the U.S. invasion of Iraq has produced a terrorist Disneyland?
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about this, I think when a theme park gets used in political discourse, when it gets used in popular culture and isn't referring to the actual theme park space, I think people are focusing kind of to the negative connotation. And we see sort of in an exercise here in semiotics that people are very suspicious of theme parks. The connotation seems to be something like it's a fantasy space, it's escapist, it's non-intellectual. It's a place where you sort of get a whitewashed version of reality or of society. So when we use it in political discourse, I think we realize that people do have this connotation like, well, if it's a theme park, it's not serious, it's escapist. So therefore, we apply it to our political enemies or to situations like the war in Iraq that we don't find very palatable because we want to sort of draw on that negativity that's associated with the theme park. And I think that's another interesting reflection on the earlier discussion about authenticity and the idea that a theme park, you know, inherently isn't authentic, so we can apply it then as a metaphor to focus on other situations that seem to be inauthentic or politically challenging or whatever.
Scott Lucas is the author of Theme Park. He spoke with Anne Strange Champs.